and welcome to the WIFPICS World PICU Awareness Week podcast series. I'm Kate Madden, one of the PICU attendings at Boston Children's Hospital, and it's a great pleasure to have with me today Melissa Pilbeam, a senior PICU pharmacist at Queensland Children's Hospital in Brisbane, and Lisa Russell, a senior nurse at the Children's Hospital Westmead in Sydney. Thanks so much for joining me today. We're going to talk today about the PICU Liberation Bundle, the A to F Bundle, and specifically focus on the A and C elements of the bundle, which, as we know, is analgesia and choice of sedation. So yeah, just to start off, I think I'd love to hear what the impact of the SCCM PANDEM guidelines release was at your institution, and in general, how you have approached having an analgesia-led sedation guideline and creating and implementing that in your unit.
Yeah, so we had implemented in 2020 a very analgesia-led sedation guideline. And so the really good news for us is when PANDEM guidelines came out in 2022, we had a lot of matching. So around 2020, we'd done our sedation guideline and we rolled out liberation within the unit, obviously looking at all of the good work that was happening internationally in that space. And we chose a year that obviously, you know, with COVID and the challenges, that was probably a year that wasn't sort of, you know, it was a little bit difficult.
Unusual, yeah.
So, you know, 2 years down the track, and when, you know, the PANDEM guidelines came out, it was really good to reinvigorate it, to reintroduce it, obviously, because everything became about COVID, as we all know. And so, you know, just, and, you know, with staffing loss that does happen during COVID, just to re-kickstart it all, review our guidelines, make a few little tweaks to it. So we added some things in there that had a little bit more nuanced withdrawal management. Some of the really amazing things that we've done as part of that liberation bundle, you know, really just aligned with those guidelines, which was fantastic. But, you know, were we doing what we had set out to do? We had really reduced our benzodiazepine usage and our chlorohydrate usage, which was something that we actually were using a lot of as a unit. And so we virtually, we have no chlorohydrate usage, so we've eliminated that. I can say eliminated. Benzodiazepines has reduced a lot, but obviously sedation is such a tricky thing that, you know, it creeps a lot back into practice where we've maximized other agents.
Sure. Aside from minimizing benzodiazepines and now eliminating chlorohydrate, which is terrific, what were some of the main elements of the guideline that were a change or a renewed focus for your staff?
So one of the things that we had really, really laid down and laid down the groundwork for in 2020 was just really making sure that our scoring, we changed over to RAS. We had reduced the amount of scoring. So in some cases we had, you know, two different scoring sets. So for delirium, we reduced that down to CAPD just and for pain, for flak. And so just, you know, where you have those different scales, people are getting confused about what they should be doing when. There's too many things to do. So that was something that, because the framework of that had been laid down, then in 2022, when that came out, we were really able to say, well, now that we've actually nailed our understanding of scoring and actually doing the scoring, now we can really sit down and try and try and encourage the communication and the understanding of that and the use of that in our goal-directed patient plan for the day.
So we do analgesia, sedation, withdrawal, and delirium. So your sedation, we're using the RAS. And then the analgesia, we use dependent on whether they're intubated or extubated or their age. And then the WAT one for withdrawal and the CAPD for delirium. The delirium one's a little bit hard. In regards to, I think people sort of struggle about when to do it. So when I do teach it, I'm very much, it's not an instantaneous score. Like it's what you've seen over the last, 6 hours, or, it's an accumulative score. So it's just, I think, getting people's heads around that, because the others are sort of the hourly, right. This is what you're seeing.
What do you think has been a key to the success of having the staff adopt all of these scores so well in your unit?
I think the best thing that I've seen is the conversations that are had, and people are very aware that, if they think that their patient's in withdrawal, then they have the scores to go to that they can check. And, and then I think it's getting their heads around. The one thing I'm finding at the moment is I say to people, like, if you think that your patient's withdrawing, give them a stat dose of the drug that's been weaned. And if the withdrawal symptoms decrease or go away, then you know that they're in withdrawal. Because you're giving them what they need. And I think it's just trying to get them to understand that.
Having that really, that goal-oriented focus where we're using those scoring as ways to actually direct our day and improving that communication between staff. That sort of happened a lot more around that time when the 2022 came out, and having that really, international best practice document is something that really speaks to consultants as well. And so it's just this, yes, we're doing the right thing. This is agreed upon, and, look, we're already kind of doing it and we need to improve.
All the nursing staff are very on board with what the guideline says and how we should be managing the weaning of the analgesia and sedation. There's no sort of guideline in how much to give. What I've done is I implemented sword pumps. So the sword project is the sedation, analgesia, withdrawal, and delirium. And so we've got these specific pumps that you would put your drugs in that you can bolus. And then what we're trying to do is reduce the amount of the continuous infusion, but be able to bolus more frequently if we need to, and then have more of an accurate accountability of the drugs given to be able to start weaning correctly.
Yeah, I think I think that's such, it's sort of straightforward to say, and that, you need to have a shared understanding by standardized scoring and a shared goal. But that, I think, is such a key element, that getting everybody on the same page. Where are we? Where are we trying to get? And is everybody in agreement about where we are and where we're trying to go with sedation? Also been a real challenge for us. What would you say, aside from getting the scoring simplified and the goals in alignment, what else would you say are some real kind of keys to your success with implementation of the guideline?
Definitely the keys to success was trying to build in champions into practice. Obviously champions are everything. to do with implementing change. And we have come a long way with our culture change around levels of sedation. We have a long way to go, but I think, we should congratulate ourselves on where we've come from. But just getting that unit-wide culture change in regards to, can we lighten sedation, that confidence, all that sort of thing, that's probably the key message that champions could get through. Can we lighten sedation? And when you lose those champions, so we're probably 4 years on now post our initial rollout of Liberation. And so, that loss of champions or turnover of champions and you don't have that continuity, that definitely has had an impact on, relaying that messaging and keeping it consistent and having everyone on board and on the same page. The other thing we did was liberation rounding. So in the early stages, we had liberation rounding. It started to become embedded in our practice, but obviously a whole other round in the day, it's just, it's a lot to expect. And then who buys into that? And then you have two different teams making decisions and secondary conversations. And so that we tried to sort of slowly implement into business as usual, but I think that probably has fallen off a little bit.
So I've been working on this sword project. I say it's still a project because it's not something that's going to stop since 2019. It's taken a while to get it to where it is, but now my focus will be on data collection. For a few years there was sort of three significant champions. We all did the project together. We all had a different element, and I'm the only one left now. And then I've had a couple of secondments last year and this year. So there's not been a champion as such within the unit consistently. So my plan now is to look at the data when there was the three of us championing it and look at the data now to see how often the scores are being done, how much withdrawal we are seeing, and, if the length of stays increased with patients. And then I'm pretty confident that data is going to show that, when we're doing things the right way, best practice, I should say, and that we have less withdrawal and delirium within the unit. So then I can go to the intensivists and say to them, we need 100% buy-in.
Yeah, I think that's a common thread that many of us have experienced around the world, that the loss of experienced staff and the turnover, and how that has impacted a lot of these initiatives, and just the degree of seniority and expertise in our teams has certainly changed. What do you see as sort of the key focus or the important goals that we should strive to achieve as a field moving forward in addressing the A and C elements of the bundle?
I really think, if you're not really sort of, we've got these very high and lofty goals, but I think really to dumb it down and just say, I think even if we haven't yet proven that it has improved PICU length of stay and mortality, I think potentially we could and we could do better, but the problem is, what are you using as your baseline? Every unit is so different in individual practice, and that is just autonomy of individual preference and practice, and have such variable levels of experience and lots of international people working across different units. And so, you don't want to pull back on that. But at the same time, I think it's really, really important to just have this common language. And the common language is, what are our sedation targets? And, having that scoring as that common language, I see that as something that would be a key focus, because even if we haven't yet proven the reduction in mortality, then we can prove that, we've got this earlier mobility, we might be reducing VAP, we've got reduced pressure injuries. There's so many benefits still. So I don't think that, saying that it doesn't work is, I think we've got lots of evidence to say the amazing amounts of benefits, but I think it would be good to have, better looks at data to really see if we can prove that reduction in length of stay and mortality, because I think it's definitely there. It's just, it's difficult to tease out for numerous reasons and challenges with data. But if we can keep doing what we're doing and having a look at teasing that out, I think that would be good.
I think we really need to get the sedation and analgesia up to scratch to try and go along with the guidelines of like Liberate, because if we want to try and get these patients up and out of the ICU, we need to start their rehab on admission. And I think that's a really difficult sort of plan.
Yeah, I think and you've highlighted so nicely how interconnected all the elements of the bundle are, and how when we're, addressing one element, we're also really impacting likely a couple of other elements of the bundle. And so really the benefits may be, as you've said, enhanced mobilization, decreased delirium, other benefits that may not ultimately show a signal in mortality or other classic patient outcomes, but will be really important to patients and their families, certainly.
And that family interaction, you can see, if they can hug and touch and feel, like that's just so much, it just brings so much more. And obviously the effects to the baby themselves, even if they don't look conscious, like subconsciously that you can see some kind of a smile, or just hearing that parent voice, or just family around them, that's a form of security, a loss of anxiety, and that to me is a reduction in need for sedation in some cases. So there's definitely benefits for non-pharmacological, even though we're trained to think that we're hardcore and PICU.
Yes,
but there are definitely benefits to music therapy and touch and feeding and all of those things that we can try and optimize in the background, even lights in the unit, sleep wake cycles, all of the things that can make a difference. If we put them all together, they really can.
Absolutely. So there's a lot to do, that's for sure.
So much. But I mean, you don't want to put this heavy load or a small amount of champions. So the more that message can get out, the more champions you can have. But I really think you do need a triple focus. You need the triple threat. You need medical, nursing, and pharmacy for that analgesia sedation component, and obviously that overlaps into delirium. And the same with the mobility. I think you need that nursing, medical, and physio. So the three together, and if you have the three working in conjunction, I think that there's no limit to what you can do. But everybody's got so many competing interests in ICU. There's so many things to focus on. It is hard to get better. There is a lot of physician burnout. And that's a topic of a lot of conversations as well. So there is lots to think about and do, but we don't want to pile on jobs to people as well. We want to sort of try and make it out every day without having to have this fatigue and constantly educating, constantly feeling like you've got to push an agenda, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's right. You want to increase awareness and speak to sort of the benefits both for the patient and for the staff to see the positive impacts of these interventions. So, well, Melissa and Lisa, thank you so much for shedding light on the challenges and opportunities in approaching the A and C elements of the bundle with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
Thanks so much for having me.